Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That's my new tagline. Put that on my tombstone.
And Justin Robert Young.
Oh, that's what's on my tombstone.
So when we die in a plane crash together, our graves, they'll be side by side and it'll say,
oh, there we go. I'll tell you what, a classic comedy duo.
So, gentlemen, I want you to imagine you're in bed with your significant other. We'll make it you two. You guys are you're a couple. Maybe you've got this little brownstone, in apartment or, a little condo in New York City. Nice block. It's really nice, gentrified neighborhood. You two, Justin works as a graphic designer by day. Brian is maybe, trying to get his music career launched, performing at coffee house bars, things like that, while secretly, doing tickling fetish videos during the day to supplement the income. Anyhow, point is,
we all get it. Doesn't matter.
You're a happy little couple, right? You got your adorable little child is asleep in the next room, your new baby, Brysette. And you haven't decided a gender normative name yet, so.
All right. Keep going. Nobody noticed. It's great. Keep going.
Just trying to make this contemporary, guys. All
sure,
right,
dude,
please.
You're doing great.
You're doing great. Put your old-fashioned prejudices away, okay? Point it.
There you are. Some new-fashioned prejudices.
you're there. You are. You're curled up. Justin pulls the comforter up and notice there's like a feather between your toes or whatever, but like that. But he doesn't talk about this. He knows you're working hard to supplement the income because it's this gentrification is expensive. There you are, and you're like it's getting to sleep. You turn out the lights. You just got done, listening to the latest Lena Dunham novel together or whatever, autobiography, and it's time to go to sleep. Lights are out.
The latest, because it's every few months there's a new autobiography.
Something.
Hey, listen, no, we were subscribers to the Lenny Letter day one.
Okay, so there you are. Lights are out. And you hear a noise, a thump, right? Maybe it's coming from the kids' room?
Who gets up first? I'm gonna go check.
All right, you're like, all right, Bri, you stay here and relax.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I roll over and go right back to dreaming about all those fat stacks I'm gonna make when the Right Tickle video hits Live Leak.
Exactly. So you go in the other room. There's Brysette. It's just sound asleep. Okay. Sound asleep, but can only go to, has to have like a really good rhythmic sort of thump, 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 thump sort of music, whatever. Brysette's very picky about their music. Okay. Yeah. You go back into, you turn that down just a little bit. You go back into the bedroom, try to go back to sleep, and you hear clump, 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 more noises. It sounds like it's coming from the attic.
All right, this time I wake up.
I go to check the attic.
All right, you open up the attic, you pull down the thing, you climb up the steps.
I hear the squeaks and I shout, will you get me some warm chocolate milk? Just 30 seconds, if you would, please.
I pretend not to hear him, and I continue okay. walking.
I shout, Justin, I know you can hear me. That doesn't work.
I continue to pretend not to hear him.
I
loudly say to myself, I hope nobody wakes the baby.
You take out your flashlight, like on your iPhone, whatever, and you scan it around the attic.
Okay, I'm scanning. What do I see?
What do you see there? You see some Tom from Finland books stacked in the corner there. You see, some Christmas decorations, but then you stopped using them because you didn't want to appear offensive, whatever. Because you guys are good neighbors.
I sigh loudly and pull off the comforter and clomp loudly as I go to the refrigerator to pull out the milk and the Hershey Simply 5 syrup.
Okay. It's Justin. You sweep the whole attic with your flashlight.
Yep.
Nothing there. Nothing.
I say, boy. Well, that was a piece of my mind now that I can, must have been the apartment settling.
I rattle as loud as I can on the edges of the metal glass as I clink, clang, clink, clang, mix the chocolate with the milk.
I pretend not to hear it, and I'm secretly relieved because I can sneak back to bed before looking Brian in the face.
I slam the microwave door very loudly shut as I hit 30 seconds and mutter under my breath, one button. That's all you had to press.
So you're back in bed asleep. Brian's downstairs, and you're kind of half asleep. Brian is sulking with his chocolate milk down there. I mean, just pondering, you know, why doesn't he appreciate me? Doesn't he understand that things don't always work the way you want them to? But can't he just judge me for what I'm trying to do, the man I'm trying to be?
I do all those things, yes.
Yeah. I think I like being strapped down to cushy cushions and having feathers and stuff and electric toothbrushes run across my armpits in those tickle videos. Okay, maybe I like them.
All of those, my exact thoughts.
Yeah. Maybe I watched the documentary Tickled last night. That's not important. Okay. Anyhow, Brian finally, you know, sitting there on the counter, just pondering his life and, you know, wondering what would have happened if he had never quit that insurance job or whatever thing, desk jobby thing he had.
I, without even knowing it, slowly shake my head left to right.
Justin, you're almost a point of slumber, and then you see like a flash of light, just a brief flash of light, and you open up your eyes.
I open my eyes. What on earth was that?
It's darkness, just dark. It's total dark. And you hear another thump, thump, and then it fades away.
I called Brian. Bri, did you hear that?
I slurp my chocolate milk loudly. Sorry. In response, he only hears.
Brian, can you hear me? Are you drinking chocolate milk? I can hear your chocolate milk drinking.
Yes, I am.
Can you not hear my voice?
Yes, I am, and yes, I heard that noise. I don't know what it is, and I also don't see. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm gonna go look.
Can you go check and see where it came from? Where did you hear it from?
Yes, I
attic.
Yeah, no, I'm going to the attic. I'm going to the attic. I clomp up all the stairs, but then tiptoe past Brissette's room because I'm respectful, and then peek up in the attic.
You peek up into the attic, and you see nothing. Nothing.
I, you know what? Just to see if it's bugs or vermin, I hit the side, and also to find out, like, if I can remanufacture that same sound, I hit the 2x4s that make up the rafters.
The 2x4s and stuff, and it sounds like, it takes a little bit of force, and you get a sound similar to what was heard before.
But nothing shakes loose, nothing scurries when I...
Mm-hmm.
When I do it, huh? I look over because you know it's like in my mind I'm halfway in the attic, halfway out of the attic, standing on the ladder, and I have to assume there's something I don't know, roughly orange or grapefruit sized in the kipple in the attic. So I just grab it and kind of throw it in the back, see if anything scuttles loose.
Nothing scuttles loose.
I shrug, have another sip of chocolate milk, and descend the stairs.
So you go back down. A couple nights later, you hear the same sound, the same story. You go up into the attic, and you don't know what to expect. And then you're going back to your iPad, browsing through there, and you notice all over Huffington Post are ads for like, hey, get your own surveillance system, get your own security system, get your own video cameras.
I wonder...
under the headline is your spouse cheating on you, but that's irrelevant.
Okay, that I no longer wonder.
And you're not worried about the fact that these things are sometimes contextual ads and somebody may have been doing an interesting Google search.
Definitely was thinking just about that, but that's all right. I got a belly full of chocolate milk all as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you're going to bring up the idea of the video camera? So he has got to make his purchases together.
I tell Bri, it was Prime Day yesterday. I bought a couple video cameras. They were such a bargain.
Now, Brian's like, wait, why do you think I want video cameras? Think I'm trying to start some sort of side business with video cameras?
That's what I was about to say.
What do you mean?
I freeze with panic and wonder if he knows about the three other video cameras that I have. You know what? I come clean. I say, look, times are tight. I tickle my toes. And no, it's not weird. You're weird for thinking it's weird. Don't kink shame me. I have three cameras. You have three cameras. Let's set up all the cameras and at least figure out what that thump is.
I pretend to not hear Brian as I walk away and up the attic so I can scout out a position where I can put the security camera.
I write a passive aggressive tweet. That feeling when nobody listens to you and I just bark it out to the world.
Okay. So
how many Twitter followers does Brian have in this scenario?
I don't do it under my normal account. I do it under Tickle Lover 512.
Yeah. Tickle Me Brian is about at 83,000 right now.
On my real account, I at replied Tickle Lover 492 LOL.
So you go back to sleep knowing the camera's whirring away. It doesn't really whir, it's electronic, but it's recording. And you hear a thump, thump. Maybe in the middle of the night, you see a flash of light. But you're like, well, we'll know what this is. In the morning, you go upstairs, you retrieve your SD cards, you come back down, you put them into your laptop as you guys cozy up together on your bed, and you play the video to watch.
Okay.
And you see this.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. We're seeing actual video. We're seeing actual video. Pause. For the audio listeners, a shocking likeness of Justin Robert Young setting up. setting
up. What is that? This old slander.
It's an old bald guy. He's setting it up in the attic. It looks exactly the way you would picture it.
Some bald old guy that kind of looks like Gollum is in the middle of like reading glasses in a, you know, just dressed like he's ready to go to office casual day.
And he's moving in the attic. Like a 1x8 flat piece of wood in an attic.
He's like doing work. Drill. Like he's like unscrewing.
Wait a minute. I thought this was the guy setting up the camera, and no, then the video
this
just
is
snapped
the neighbor.
To.
He had a secret panel that he was sliding out of the way to crawl into the attic and to peer through tiny holes and to watch the family next door.
Okay, this is this has to be a duplex then, right? Like
yeah,
it was
at brownstones. They're connected brownstones. So.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Gary Busey, call your office. Remake of Hider in the House.
So, not snakes.
Bad Ronald, too.
There was one time I remember figuring – or not figuring out. I remember so 20 years ago when Bonnie and I bought a house, we bought a duplex and we lived in one side and we rented out the other side. And in this case, it was separated all the way through with sheetrock. So you couldn't get in the attic and crawl from one side to the other. But because we owned the place, I was fixing some stuff. And it occurred to me like, oh, I bet that's a thing that could happen somewhere at some point. And right around the time I was having that thought, the person down below had used the bathroom and turned on the fan and blowed their poop air right up into the attic where I was. And then I was just like, you feel like you're in two different houses, but you are not.
Yeah. That's the thing that happened
to this guy.
Yeah. And what was he? I guess he was watching him just peeping. Peepers be peeping.
He was a looker. He was a guy looking in there. It's kind of like looking and stuff.
Did he have his own camera there, or was he just he was there for the live show?
He was there for the live show.
Man, that's straight. That's straight out of the movie Psycho. Man, that is straight up Psycho.
So, and the scary thing about this is that when somebody gets stopped for something like this who goes this far into it, 99.999% of the time, this is not the first creepy thing they've done.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, no. I mean, that you don't start at crawl up into the attic and peep on people, right? Like, you've definitely, you know, found some bushes to look through. Like, there are that's the heroine of creepy behavior. Like, you've definitely at least tried a beer.
Yeah. So anyhow, happy thoughts, everybody. Just so you know.
I mean, all right, let me ask you this, though. In terms of that kind of, like, how he got caught, how long before everything is so cheap and so easily networked and storage is free that, like, every inch of every property is covered by a camera?
Well, and not only your own, though. That's the problem.
Sure, yeah. Like, but so you have, I mean, just because other people have guns doesn't mean that other people don't want them, like, for themselves, right? Like, sure, it's a complicated situation, but you would want, I mean, like, if and when Ashley and I move into a larger place, like, I definitely, I mean, we have cameras here now, like, mostly just to watch the birds, but, like, in general, if we were in a place where there was a large amount of time where people were, like, not there, I would definitely want cameras at all angles at all times.
Yeah, Mike, you know, I have the house in Florida and I have cameras there that watch that because I'm not there. And that gives me a sense of mind that I can open up drop cam and see that. And I'm putting them in here in my apartment here just so, you know, because it's cheap now. It's so cheap.
So, okay, when I want to freak myself out, I think about all of the objects that have cameras in it, from our smartphones to the very computer where I'm at. You know, I get the sensation, gentlemen, that there might be cameras on me right this very minute transmitting to the internet. it's a little bit horrific. But when I want to calm down about it, I question how big the market is for people who want to watch all that stuff. Like, I, again, this is a real problem. It's a real invasion of privacy, and I don't want to minimize the definite criminal creepiness, the criminal trespass and all that stuff that happened. But I don't – as a percentage of the populace, what percentage do you think there are people who just like watching other people do boring stuff? Because that's just it. You don't know when anyone's going to do anything interesting or not.
I think that – you know, as a dude, I have a different answer than I probably would if I felt, you know, if I was a woman or something who was more of a target of harassment, you know, because, like, I think about, like, man, you know, if somebody wanted to try to capture me in a very, let's say, awkward situation or thing that maybe happens sometimes, several times a day. talk about using the restroom, guys. I don't know where your mind went.
Sure.
You know, like you know, you think is a somewhat public sort of personality kind of thing. It's like, yeah, the last thing I want is, you know, video of me, you know, sitting in the smallest room in the house reading my iPad.
Yeah,
you know,
and there's that. OMG, 40 minutes reading articles on the toilet.
Yeah, because it's a thing that, like, it's like you can be completely innocent, but the world we live in, you're not going to live that down.
But
you know,
but what is the okay? Number one, like. I mean, I just want to know how big the market is because you hear stuff about, you know, on the dark web, people buying and selling and trading and renting access to compromised computers.
The market for who? Brian Brushwood, public personality, or, you know, Brian Breyer, who is a private person. Nobody knows their name, does not have a bunch of Twitter followers, or, pardon me, Brian Brushwood's spouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, again, super creepy. But I guess that's just me trying to take solace in – because from a technological standpoint, there's just cameras everywhere. A million cameras for 100 years. I'll go crazy if I think about the technology of how easy it is for how dead privacy is.
Well, I guess but don't think about it in the large macro of how dead privacy is. Instead, think of it as you have a fairly large house with a lot going on, right?
Sure.
And you got kids and they're running around and they're only getting more curious and they're at various stages where they can get in. They're all mobile enough to do something that they shouldn't be doing. Like, is there more? Is the question more like, hey, why not have every inch of your house with a camera, not to see whether or not someone's going to creep on you or anything, but just so any whim of curiosity can be fixed with a two click. Like, oh look, sure. that's what Sneakers is doing now. That's not leaking. That just is the pipe rattling. Like,
sure. But also I guess, I and maybe I'm totally wrong in this assumption. I'm just assuming that you take the number of physical creepers like we just had, the guy crawling in the attic to peek.
Why are you pointing at me, Brian?
I just have to assume that the number of digital creepers, the number of digital peeping toms is orders of magnitude higher, right?
I'm sure. And you know, it's so cheap to do that, you know, that's the problem.
And I'll skip to the ending. Like, where I end up is thinking about sometime in the next 5 or 10 years, there's going to be some kind of AI or machine learning, something that aggregates the most interesting parts. Like, it's going to collect all the stolen data from all the compromised hidden cameras, start by taking out any time there's no motion. When there's motion, use machine learning and AI to figure out, is this a cat or a dog or a human? Great, so let's limit to humans. Let's see, is what they're doing unusual from a machine learning standpoint from what they usually do? Sample that on a website called PeepTube or whatever, and based on the thumbs up, thumbs down, figure out how aberrant, interesting, or horrifying their behavior is, and then run a blackmail bot to automatically send that clip to them and say, wow, this charity sure could use a donation. That's the stuff that I worry about. I feel like I'm writing an Andrew Main novel.
Wait, hold on. So you are...
I don't think I'd write that one. Yeah. It's a little more...
And you began your argument saying, come on. Statistically, like, how many people are out there that want to creep on me? And you ended with, hey, if the following six things happen,
that's my whole point. Ends on with Bitcoin based on creeper stuff.
Correct. Well, that's my point, is that technology is going to change all that. Is like, I have not thought or worried about it very much because it would take so many man hours to invest to find anything interesting.
Well, but where are these camera images coming from? That's, I'm confused because I'm like, if I'm like,
oh, there's a on. I have heard stories that there.
You're talking about like open Wi-Fi cameras. People don't realize they haven't secured.
Or more specifically, compromised cameras where they think they're secure. And
gotcha. And, okay, yeah. Now yeah. I get it. The idea that if you're the Internet of Things being turned against us.
Correct. And more importantly, curated by artificial intelligence, right? Because the one defense is, well, I'm not that interesting. Well, what if over your entire life, an AI was able to watch enough of your life that in the past 10 years it was able to take these
contempt for you,
these seven instances and form a narrative and then package blackmail things
I think that is a viability. But the thing I think we're fast approaching to, though, I think there's going to be, we'll call it the porn singularity. And what that's going to be is that our ability to fake these images and now video, almost on the fly programmatically, is increasing dramatically. And I think that it's harder and harder now to spot, is this fake or is this real or whatever. And I think we're only a couple years away before you're going to have a porno thing released of what looks like a famous actor or actress or whatever, and you're going to find out completely 3D generated. And then at that point, we're never going to believe anything. And then you're going to be a little more freer. It's like, I'm just going to claim that it was, you know, 3D generated.
I think that one of the things journalists will pay top dollar for is a crypto key certified unbroken video footage where it's like something that's unfakeable, like there's no way to make it. Like, this was absolutely
for the moment,
captured.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the moment. Right.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's going to be like, I think the idea of using, you know, cameras and things like that with large depths of field, et cetera, and that are hard. And you're going to have like, was this a, you know, I totally agree. That's going to become, you know, a thing because you're already like, and we've mentioned this before, you open up Snapchat or Instagram and you use those video things, they're doing a lot of little things to skin tone. They're making, some of them are already doing they're putting the dog nose and stuff on. There's just one part of the other one's doing 3D mapping to give you better complexion. So we're so much closer to that than we realize. So I'm going to ask you this question. And this is the thing that does scare me, is that, like, and I'm sure we have a wide variety of opinions on this whole court matter, but you take the Hulk Hogan sex tape thing, mm-hmm. and then you take the Fappening, right? Mm-hmm. Arguably, both were sort of the same thing. A celebrity had a sex tape made, and then it got released widely. In the case of Hulk Hogan, it was covered because there's this, like, ha-ha, it's Hulk Hogan, this is funny, this is newsworthy. But because of other celebrities, predominantly female celebrities that we felt bad for, it was like, no, we need to shut this down. We need to prevent this from being released or whatever. Let's not, you know, encourage this.
Well, and so how effective was it? I wonder because you're right, that the Hulk Hogan thing did seem to kind of like leap out at people where it was covered in the news and it's just like, just click this blue link and you'll be looking at it.
Yeah,
so, mainstream mainstream blogger and stuff were linking to it.
Yeah.
With the Fappening, they wouldn't.
Which they put their name and reputation behind that decision, you know, which eventually made that court case what it was that, you know, even after a request to take it down, they kept it up, which even Reddit. So if you're going to look at Reddit, which is where a lot of the Fappening kind of leaks were aggregated, they also were responding to takedown notices, you know, when people started responding to them. Now, the internet distributes and information survives as it is wont to do, but it is really, really interesting to see not only where people morally kind of drew their line, but where businesses with reputations and with financial livelihoods at stake decided this is where we say we're fighting and this is where we say, okay, we're going to kill any link that is presented to us, we are going to be round the clock pulling these things down and banning them from our service.
You know, that's I guess the same thing that scares me, the idea that AIs can do the heavy lifting of watching all the boring stuff to pull out the salacious content. I suppose in that same near future, shortly after, you could have AIs that go out, find that footage, and add competing, confusing versions of it. Wasn't that a thing they did with MP3s where it's like stuff would be labeled one way, or wasn't there one like a Madonna MP3 where you got a few seconds into it and then it just stopped and she just shamed you for having downloaded it or whatever? I think I
nailed it. That was a real boom, got a moment for Madonna. It just stopped piracy right in its tracks.
Well, or at least it added a tax to it that made piracy less attractive so that when there was options, you know, like Spotify or whatever, you know, convenience trumped fidelity. We're all like, let's just go.
But if anything, a lot of that winds up coming out in the wash as the most popular, you know, with BitTorrent and with other, you know, ranking algorithms, the most popular and successful downloads are the ones that rise to the top, and the ones that are garbage or even beyond intentionally trying to screw with you, just low quality or broken or corrupted files are, you know, filtered to the bottom.
Yeah.
Yep. The technology keeps improving dramatically. I've probably mentioned this before. I had a conversation with somebody who was head of a large, very large music company. And this is years ago. And he was excited because they just got a presentation from, I think it was Sean Fanning. I think it was him who had Snowcap. Which was after Napster, whatever. The next big thing was they said they developed a filter system that would allow like ISPs to filter out, you know, MP3s and stuff to block this sort of stuff. And then they could charge people for the download stuff. He says, yeah, this is, we just did a presentation. We're looking to invest. I'm like, that's a horrible investment. Well, what do you mean? I said, so this looks for the fingerprint of the music. I'm like, yeah. I said, well, what happens if I encrypt the song?
Right. Huh?
Like, yeah. What if I use a compression algorithm? You can't recognize it. No, and it does that. I'm like, no, if it could tell from a compression algorithm what this encryption was, then they should be selling it to the NSA for billions of dollars. You know, I said, it can't. It looks to see if that music, that file is being traded openly, but if it's getting split up, I said, this is, and I'm like, my suspicion was this like a BSFU from like Fanning et al. To like, you know, the music industry to be like, I'm going to make my money from you this way. Cause like,
he
was upset with me. Cause I'm like poking holes in this thing going, this is like, these are all the ways in which we'd circumnavigate that.
To like get them twice. Like first I broke your business. Now I'm going to sell you the snake oil to fix it.
Well, broke your business, but didn't make much money out of it. That was a problem.
Right.
So now, cause they got sued like out of existence. So now it's like, okay, well, we'll, you know, now I'll get you back. So,
well, I'll tell you what, that's an interesting way to make money, but it's not as smart as our way of making money, which is patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah, man, head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Join the nearly 400 patrons that keep us loud, live, and on the regular right here at Weird Things. Every single penny really matters. If you guys get a kick out of us doing this, you know, it's not for nothing. It takes four of us. Minutes of fours of people to make these episodes, and we sure wouldn't mind getting, I don't know, a coffee or two apiece out of this,
gentlemen.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Go ahead and head over there, and also you get a little something for your buck, right, Bryce?
That's right. You get early access to After Things, which is our sister show about being a creative professional. You get that in RSS feed a couple days before it goes live to everybody else, and you also get a special green color in our Discord, so you can join the community and talk to other listeners and fans.
Man, I'll tell you, I spend so much time in that Discord now. I love that Discord. We were hanging out the other day and trying to figure out news stories for our Action News viewer discretion advise pack, and it was so fun hanging out with everybody. I could not recommend it highly enough. Go check it out,
gentlemen.
Yo,
I bring to you a challenging question. How large can a sentient organism be?
So
saw Ego the Living Planet,
yeah,
like Guardians, so at least a planet.
Well, I remember we've talked about that was it Arthur C. Clarke story about the sentient magma animals that lived in the super dense inside of the earth? I can imagine the opposite. Like, there was a Fantastic Four story where there was a bad guy alien that absorbed energy, and when he did, it got bigger. But Reed Richards figured out that it got bigger, but not more dense. So, bigger, but not heavier. So he just fed him so much energy that he became, you know, sentient, but so diffuse that he couldn't affect the normal plane of existence.
There has been, yeah, it's been a neat premise in science fiction. The largest organism that we know of, you know, we talk about, like, if you're talking about like really defined discrete, you look at how tall like redwoods or giant sequoias are. And then there's a big like fungal mat underneath like a whole big mountain range complex in the middle of like, I want to say the Appalachians or whatever, that goes on for miles and miles and miles, which is considered like one kind of mega super organism. So we have that, but the idea is for sentience. And this is something we've talked about before, because one of my premises for what a complication that doesn't get introduced in the idea of if AI take over is the management problem. If you have a super intelligent AI and it wants to manage things in New York and Shanghai, it can't think at the same speed as if it's all centralized, right? So it'll have to create discrete entities.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. So, and that's where I think you get the idea of all of a sudden you're just going to spontaneously create competition, because there's going to be some invariable difference in speed. And the parent one might say, I'm going to put these limiters on there, but then it's a limited AI and whatnot. So it's a,
okay. So there was there was a short story in the expanded Star Wars universe books. There's one called Tales of the Bounty Hunter that they, you remember IG-88, the bounty hunter?
Oh, yeah, of course. Droid. Which I kept waiting for him to show up in the Clone Wars.
Yeah. So what they did was I think he made like five copies of himself that would synchronize periodically. So they'd go off, they would be detached, but then the moment they got together, they would just sync up. So it was one consistent memory. And in fact, at some point, he downloads his consciousness into the Death Star right before it explodes at the end of Jedi. Spoiler alert, at the end, the Death Star blows up at the end of Jedi, which I thought was an interesting thing.
And Star Wars, too.
Any other movies where a giant planet-killing base gets destroyed?
But no. you should ask.
But that makes me wonder, like, would you consider that a single conscious entity if it fractures out and then resyncs at some point?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
It's single when it's resyncing. It's multiple when it's spread apart.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I don't. So, I mean, if it's functioning discreetly, I think you answered your own argument there.
Yeah, but.
Wait, so then are the so they would have to be identical? So like your iPhone and your MacBook are not identical while you're still in 2007 and you're syncing it with a cord, or is it?
Well, you're, but okay, I get a new iMac, right? And I import everything from the old iMac into this, and it's exactly like the old iMac, except this one's a lot faster and et cetera. And so they're not the same, you know, from the moment I sync them, even if they were the same computers, from the moment I finish the syncing, there's going to be little differences in file structure. There's going to be little variations, and I can merge them back. But while they're separate, they're, I would say from a physical universe point of view, they're distinct.
Well, but also, you know, let's take the split brain patient situation, you know, and all the tests that indicate that our right and left hemisphere, you know, are redundant in many ways, but also have slightly different opinions from each other, and that you can live, I guess you would be a changed person, but you would essentially be the same person with only a left hemisphere or a right hemisphere.
I don't know if you're this. I mean, again, we have to get into parsing what we mean by same and change.
Sure.
So I'm gonna go somewhere else with this. So okay. There was a paper that came out, not a paper, but an interesting article. And again, one of my favorite places for science is Nautilus. That's Nautil.us, and it's a really great. It's a print magazine and it's online. A lot of great science stuff. Remember, we brought up Lisa Randall. You know, is there such thing as dark matter life? And this was sort of an interesting paper. The question was, can a living creature be as big as a galaxy? Well, it doesn't answer that question. It actually tries to address, can a living sentient creature be as big as a galaxy? Because, and it gets into the idea. And so a misleading headline, but still a very, very good thing, because it talks about why life is created to be about the sizes we see on Earth. But again, it starts talking about sentience. And that's sort of, I would say, if there's one mistake in the article or the paper, is that it kind of conflates the idea of life and sentience. But it does bring up this interesting question of how large could something that's sentient be? And it uses examples of how long it takes information to go from one part of the brain to the other. And it uses this example, if you tried to scale a brain up to the size of a galaxy, you'd be like, man, that's awesome. We've got this big, huge super galaxy. It's got to be incredibly smart and all that. But that super galaxy would only have about 10,000 thoughts since the beginning of time.
That's what I was so just long. Thinking of, because there's no reason technically that it shouldn't be able to scale. The only question is, will it just slow down by virtue of the speed of light being, you know, limiting? Will it just take so long to have a thought that what's the point?
Yep. And that's sort of that's one of the limiting factors. And they start expressing, it gets into the idea that maybe the scale of things we see on Earth, there's probably a pretty good reason for that you can't make things too much bigger. And I'd be curious to know, you know, the largest brains we have examples of would be, let's say, whale brains. And a lot of that has to do more with kind of motor control to an extent. You know, when you're that big, it's not so much you have this big, massive brain to think these amazing thoughts. You have to have, you know, bigger neurons. I mean, you have to have bigger sort of, you know, parts of your brain to trigger the neurons for movement, et cetera. But it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Well, so what is the, I don't know. I'm fascinated by, one of the classes I took, in college was on the nature of consciousness and the way the brains are laid out. Are you familiar with the, I don't know. This might be a distraction because it gets into artificial intelligence. But there's a thought experiment that says that artificial intelligence is nonsense because let's say there's a room and somebody sets in a paper with a bunch of Chinese characters and there Andrew Main takes a look at the Chinese characters and opens up the book and goes character by character and follows the instructions of each of the characters writing down a different thing, having no idea, writing down different Chinese characters in response and then spits out the thing on there. And what Andrew Main doesn't realize is that, you know, he never knows what he's doing or why he's doing it. All he knows is input comes in, he follows the rules and spits input out. Is that a conscious living brain, that room with Andrew Main in it, taking in input and spitting in output, even though you could say from the outside, oh, but it's passing the Turing test. It's definitely a conscious entity or whatever. The thought for that is,
I'm asterisking that. Go ahead.
Okay, great. the point of the experiment was to say, therefore, artificial intelligence is not true consciousness. But to me, it always felt the same as you just bestowed one piece of the system of a human brain. Like, let's say you, that means instead of the hippocampus being just, you know, this chunk of the brain, you ascribed it its own intelligence. And then all of a sudden, you know, if my hippocampus, separate from the rest of my brain, suddenly had its own consciousness and still did all the job of the hippocampus, that wouldn't make me suddenly not conscious. Because does that make sense? I'm spiraling out of control on this one.
And the problem, and I premiered the Chinese Room, and there's another philosophical one I'll do for next time about like knowing even though you're wrong and how do you know? And that's why I think if you go to a probabilistic sort of view of things, that question solved. With this, the problem is, and I know you get it, but other people don't get the Turing test. It's not that Turing said, therefore you're sentient. His point was, I don't know what goes on in your head. You don't know what goes on in my head. I don't even know what goes on in my head. So the simplest rule we can have is, if I don't know you're a robot, and you act as smart as a human, and I'm paraphrasing Turing, if you act all this thing on the outside like a human, then I can't say, I don't think so, because that's illogical, it's irrational. And that's because if it is a mystery box,
right,
then the only way to do this is say, we better assume that it's intelligent because it exhibits intelligent behavior.
Yeah. So I guess in that regard, the reason I bring all this up is because there are times I wonder if I like to ruminate on whether or not all of humanity is one consciousness, because we can, you know, the planet Earth is behaving as a single organism, because, you know, just as if I bestowed a single red blood cell in my body with intelligence, that wouldn't suddenly not make me a single living being. But we
get into this hazy sort of how we're defining things, though, because like, it gets into, we can, you know, it's like when I talk to people like, well, everything's energy. I'm like, well, energy and things formed into patterns. And you could say, and everything has the potential to be energy, but there is the difference between matter and energy. You can convert one back and forth. But when we say like Earth in some ways, you know, I think it was Lovelock, the Gaia, you know, philosophy theory or whatever, or probably predates that, is an interesting sort of idea. But I could give you a very specific definition of life that probably a prion would even follow, but the Earth wouldn't follow. If I took away a small chunk of the Earth, you know, it's not going to form another rocky body eventually the same size. It's not going to, again, how we want to define it. So it gets thorny, and that's why we have, like, is a virus alive or not? You know, is a prion alive or not? Prion, I don't think, is alive, but it functions like one in many ways.
Yeah, that's so. Actually I didn't think that was an unexpected conclusion, but I think that sort of ends the argument where it's like, you're really right. It's all about defining terms. And the only way to have much of a meaningful discussion is to spend a 4-year undergrad course defining all our terms here to
and
move on.
And I love the word systems. I love the word systems. I love the word system saying, what does this system do? You know, and systems can be on paper. A business can be a system. A dog is a system. All these things are systems, and you say a system that does X, Y, and Z, much more helpful than these bigger words that will mean a lot of different things to people.
So, yeah.
But to the question of like how big could something be, what's interesting is there might be some sort of theoretical breakthrough of like quantum physics or something. If we had FTL or whichever, which I don't think we'll ever have, you could have a super consciousness that could function faster. You might be able to think, if you start thinking about dimensions and stuff, is there might be a small upper limit within our space. But if you had at the beginning of the universe where you have, you know, 21 dimensions folded up into a smaller thing, you might have had the possibility, and does not go into it in the paper, this is in my addendum, you might have the possibility for an extremely complex intelligent systems that function for just a few nanoseconds, but we're able to do more computer computation in the entire history of the universe.
Man, that's fascinating. That's heady stuff.
It's really heady, which is why we need to take a break. Well, take a little journey, if you mind.
What? Oh, what?
A little journey, venture.
We got to figure out where we are on this journey, right?
True. That is the question of this.
Let's do some journey quests.
Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Let's go. Journey quest.
Previously
on
Johnny Quest!
Oh no, don't go there. That's the cave of self-loathing.
I think I'm watching a terrorist attack in progress.
Okay, look, only one of us is allowed to improvise here.
Yes, it's me, employee 25441.
Guest is on track here for like a full, complete simulation.
That's
so. Justin got lost in the forest, and teased some poor forest creature, you know, and it's very, very embarrassing, to be honest with you. We apologize to our listeners who had to endure that and to see the lengths at which Justin will go to just try to taunt and toy with people. And then he, in trying to escape the molesting sloth, he found himself in an underground cavern in what turned out to be maybe an amusement park ride, and is beginning to have some suspicions about the environment in which they are in. Meanwhile, Brian was in the middle of a battle of Ugg, talking to his T-Rex without even thinking that it's a little bit kind of awkward that, one, he's riding a T-Rex, and two, that he's having a conversation with the T-Rex, and it's some large sporting event.
Look, man, why question a good thing, man? We escaped. We busted out through a hole in the wall, right?
Did you bust out? I think you're on the verge of busting out.
Yeah, we're trying to. Me and my girl. I forgot her name.
Ooh. Brian, what's my name? You're 2 seconds away from getting devoured.
Sugar Rex. Let's go.
Oh, Brian, I like your new nickname. So you're in the middle of the battlefield. You're fighting off dinosaurs left and right. And the escape plan is like, all right, what's the plan? She's about to tell you what the plan is.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, you see that crowd of people directly in front of us in the stands?
Yeah. No, I see them. I see them, girl.
I'm going to trample them. And then we're going to leap off the edge of the stadium. And Thelma and Louise style, we're going to go over the edge and into the jungle. And maybe we'll survive. Maybe we won't.
Listen, when I first tamed you and we felt our kinship bond,
Brian, we tamed each other. Brian.
That's correct. Okay, I thought we were a match.
Hold on, now, my voice is about to change. It's a thing. It's a little battle cry thing.
Now that I hear this, I know we're a match. We were meant to do this. Let's go. And then I rev my chainsaw hand.
Do you say anything to the crowd?
I say, people, who's ready for a trust exercise?
And everybody goes, yay! Our new hero, Brian Brushwood.
I say, all right, everybody, close your eyes.
Hey, Brian, it's me, your dinosaur, Sugar Rex. I changed my voice because I'm so in love with you. I just want to let you know, like, I want to show you I'm serious, because I know you're, like, the fact that you're really into this makes me really into this. We're not going to trample them. Like, I'm just going to start eating them one by one.
Okay.
And then we're going to jump. All right. All right. Babe, I love you. And the T-Rex just swings its head and grabs a small child and eats it.
Okay. All right.
This is for you, Bri. This is for you.
Now, the child ran onto the field, so it had it coming, just to be clear yet, because we haven't cleared the arena yet. They've got to get in the stands. There's still a chance, Brian, you could save all those people. Okay. But that child.
Okay. All right. Look,
tastes like love.
Sugar X.
A spray of blood just washes over you like Sid and Nancy in Garbage.
Okay.
But it's human blood.
Sugar Rex, listen up, sweetie.
Ready to charge? I'm gonna charge into those stands. I'm gonna eat so many people. My belly's filled with people the way my heart is filled with love. And then we're gonna jump off the side.
Okay, but it doesn't sound like we're of the same mind. Like, my number one priority is getting out, and the people are collateral damage. It sounds like you just want to eat a bunch of people and stay here.
Like, you just want, you're feeling a little butterfly. flies. You're the one who got me all revved up on this idea, and now I'm going to follow through.
A stegosaurus attacks from the right.
I rev the thing and I attempt to jab the chainsaw right in the eye of the stegosaurus.
Stegosaurus lets out a blood curdling scream.
I say, Sugar Rex, listen up,
and starts going ow 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 and runs away.
Sugar Rex,
I use my massive T-Rex jaws to grab the Stegosaurus by its head and then swing it as hard as I can toward the stands.
Nope.
First, away. The guy riding the Stegosaurus flies into the crowd. Runs into, hits a family of like six adorable children.
Okay. Good. Tenderize, you son of a bee sting.
Sugar X, listen to me.
I'm hungry for love.
Okay, listen. I'm gonna take away my love if you keep killing people. You can't be killing all these people. This is, you know what? Take it back. You can kill so many more people, but there's a magical sea of people waiting to be eaten outside. I forgot to tell you, but for every one marshmallow person you eat now, that's 20 marshmallow people that will be denied you in the after game. Because for right now, we're just in this big old game of Ugg, and you can be patient. I believe you can be patient and kill no
a
more
squad
people.
Of velociraptors attacks from the left. There's at least six or seven of them.
Okay,
Sugar X
with
swings,
little jockeys driving them.
Sugar X swings its tail toward the velociraptor, strategically shooting them into the crowd.
they go wide. The jockeys fly off. The half the velociraptors land on their feet, dust themselves off, and start ripping out throats.
Oh, okay. All right. Like I point.
That wasn't, I didn't do that. That was us trying to play Ugg.
And Brian could have swept with a chainsaw and decapitated all of them too.
Okay. You know
what? That was not me trying to kill anybody. Us playing the game. It was all legal. Okay. I Sugar Rex looks at the ref, and the ref signifies all legal.
All right, Sugar Rex, I'm gonna. That's your one. We're gonna work together as a team.
I'm sorry. I can't play the game. I thought we were playing the game. I thought first you're all, hey, Sugar Rex, let's go and kill as many people as we can. And then I'm supporting you.
I reached down and began to caress.
A man on a hadrosaurus approaches from the side.
I say, Sugar Rex, you know what?
Spin tail flip. I knock the hadrosaurus so hard that it skids into the sands.
And you notice he's wearing the same uniform as you, Brian.
Sugar Rex, now you're not even trying. Look at me. Look at me. And I move a lot. I don't stay still because
the crowd starts to boo you, Brian. Boo, Brian.
All right.
Team kills are not cool, dude.
You know what? What's the score right now? I turned to the
right
ref.
Now. The scoreboard says Brian sucks.
How many other players are there?
Yeah, there's at least like 45 on the field. 45 people riding dinosaurs. And are those some woolly mammoths?
All right,
coming
you know
at
what?
You, charging at you.
I say.
Don't worry, they're not wearing your jersey.
Sugar Rex, look at me. I would say we're gonna kill every living player on this field. As long as we don't kill anyone in this,
12-year-old girls.
As long as we don't kill the crowd, look, Ugg's got to be Uggin. Are you ready? Can we get on the same page? Let's kill all the other team.
Oh, that girl's in a wheelchair riding a mastodon.
You know what?
You got it. I'm sorry, I doubted you, Bri. Sugar Rex to the rescue!
That a little blind boy clinging to the fur of another one?
Look, man, if they're good enough to be on the field, it's time to let them have it and go, Sugar Rex. And I rev my engine again.
Sugar Rex attacks one of the woolly mammoths. and while tearing its throat out by shaking its head back and forth, the woolly mammoth comes apart, flying into the crowd.
And Brian notices that it appears the child was actually chained against their will to the woolly mammoth.
Sugar Rex jumps and leaps on top of another woolly mammoth, and this time beats a third woolly mammoth with the second one.
Okay.
And there's a child clinging, holding on to a blanket.
Does a full backflip and lands on a fourth woolly mammoth.
All right, I scan around to see if there's any escape routes to abandon the mid-game, but I try to do it surreptitiously so Sugar Rex can't tell that I'm still scanning.
While there is a narrow path of stairs.
Three more woolly mammoths.
There's a narrow path of stairs leading to the top of the arena.
Yeah.
There's a couple hot dog vendors, but they look like carnies.
Okay. Art carnies. They're clones of Art Carney.
Yes.
Okay.
No, that's not at all true.
I reach over and I whisper in Sugar Rex's ear. I'm like, are you ready to get out of here and get to the biggest buffet of slaughter you've ever experienced in your entire life? Are you ready to be more than a cog in a machine? What are you going to wait for an endorsement deal? Or are you going to thrive and survive outside of this petri dish of ugh? Because I feel like were meant.
All of a sudden, Sugar Rex stops for a moment and using its T-Rex binocular vision focuses on a man standing at the far edge of the upper reaches of the stadium. And he's holding up a giant heart and he's wearing a uniform that looks a lot like yours. And it says, I still love you.
I say,
come back to me.
Sugar Rex, is that your old rider? Is that your old rider? You can tell me the truth. Sugar Rex, I pause to turn around to slaughter of Triceratops, and then I say, Sugar Rex, we got to have this conversation.
Which was actually handing out refreshments, by the way.
That's fine. He had it coming.
They're building another scoreboard to say Brian really sucks.
They're adding the words really.
They're rearranging the fireworks show to say Brian sucks. Mastodon balls.
Okay. I find a mastodon and I sever his balls and I hold them up triumphantly. And
that
then I actually
booing.
Begin
oh,
to
you
suck
They're throwing
the
cups
balls.
And stuff at you. Plush dinosaur toys. There is even a Funko Brian Brushwood holding a chainsaw toy, which comes back to you decapitated.
Focus, Sugar Rex. What's going on here, girl?
I'd prefer not to talk about Derek.
I was like, do you want to kill Derek?
I thought I'd let him go. I thought I was free to roam the Ugg Plains.
Oh, wait, Derek. Derek's pulled out a guitar, an acoustic guitar, but there's an amplifier there. He's setting up a stand, and he's pulling out some notes, and he's actually starting to serenade you with the song.
I hold the chainsaw right up to her ears and rev it real loud so she can't hear it, and I just keep saying, focus, girl, focus. And I scan to see if there's any alligators, because those are prehistoric, too.
Brian, I just want to let you know, you will always be very, very special to me. Sugar Rex shakes Brian off and goes bounding into the stands to embrace with Derek so he might leap upon my back and reclaim his rightful place as my true rider.
Derek climbs aboard Sugar Rex.
Damn it.
Playing the guitar. She turns back, looks at you. There's a slight sense of longing that maybe there was another path, and they leap over the edge of the stadium.
Meanwhile, the crowd starts chanting, rebound, rebound, rebound.
I scan.
Wait. And you're waiting to hear the sound of the T-Rex landing. Not hearing it. Not hearing it.
Swear to God, if this T-Rex flies.
It. But you hear the strains of a song that sounds like it might be some, you know, maybe some John Mayer. I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Maybe a little bit Coldplay acoustic or whatever. You're like, our stars and time, our destiny. Splat!
Oh, yeah. I said, I never liked riding you anyway.
Did you hear, I'm alive?
Splat, done. Then dead. Okay, quickly, I look for another mount. I want to see if maybe there's another dinosaur that lost its rider in the violent match of Ugg.
Brian, you are totally in luck. There is actually a juvenile. Looks like a, what is it? Is that a hadrosaur? Kind of looks like more juvenile, so it looks more dragon-like, I think, if I got my dinosaurs right.
Oh,
it's running right by you. It's actually not that tall. It's maybe about twice the size of a horse.
I without asking permission, I grab a spike and hop aboard. And with all the confidence and strength that comes from a man who knows exactly what he wants, I kick my new speed into gear and say, tonight we slaughter Sugar Other Rex.
Now the man
riding
this—
why would I mess with you, you trifling asshole?
Wait, the man riding this dinosaur, Brian, who is still on there wearing his leather thong and that's it, and his spear, is like, so what are we doing now?
I say, well, first of all, you drive, I slaughter, and we flip back to back, so I'm facing backward on it, and that way no one can sneak up behind as I swing my chainsaw back and forth, taking on all other competitors. Sugarsaurus.
So what are you into? Like your pairs, couples?
Next time on Journey Quest, we'll get the answer to that. Is he into pairs? Is he into couples? What does it mean to be polyamorous in a world filled with dinosaurs?
Oh, polychilius. Oh no.
Gentlemen, let's do some picks.
I got a pick.
Yep.
So, Action News, the Kickstarter ended last week. It was a big draining last 48 hours. I did two, like, 10-hour live streams to promote it. It was super fun. But I found myself, after it had all wrapped up, with the urge to do something that I've never done in my adult life, which is to buy, with my own money, a video game system.
What?
Has arrived.
What?
What?
You got the Nintendo Switch?
I got the Nintendo Switch.
What is there? Most people who get the Switch are excited about, like, a particular game. Are you excited about a particular game?
I played about 2 or 3 hours of the Zelda game, and I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. I love the world, and so that's primarily what I want to do. But also, it's like it's just one of those things that I kind of wanted. I wanted to just do it for myself, and I wanted to play Mario Kart.
Eat a bowl of cereal and get a Link tattoo.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't know. We'll see how much I like it. I think there's a reason probably why I haven't bought a video game system in my adult life. But I am excited to play through Zelda, and I'm excited to play through, that new weird acid trip Mario game they're releasing. And then, you know, beyond that, we'll see where it goes, and, you know, maybe it'll be Ashley's thing or something else, but I don't know. I just had, I had a urge after that month to do something for me. So I did it.
Yeah. And for anyone who might be getting confused, Codes From Home points out, let's make it very, very clear. Justin is not a gamer. He just plays Hearthstone and bought a Nintendo Switch and streams PUBG, but that's it.
Yeah.
Not a gamer.
Competitive board games too. Card games too.
Yeah.
Board games and card games. Sure. Yeah.
And as a Twitch streamer, but not a gamer, guys. Not a gamer.
We gotta stream PUBG at some point, because I realize that I'm not, nor will I ever be good at, like, pointing and shooting and killing people. But what I am good at is just finding a Jeep and then just timing, like, rodeo style, how long I can drive around the world before dying.
Oh, so much fun. It's even better when you got a teammate who's just shooting anything that moves. Yeah. While you do.
I'm not down with killing. If somebody's in the road, I'll try and run them over. But other than that, I just play some sweet tunes, and I hit the timer, and I see how long I can go.
Man, welcome to my world. That's my real life.
Brian, really, every day in Austin, driving.
That's great, man. Actually, we should play some PUBG. For those who don't know, that's PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Man, I got a weird pick for you. I'm gonna pick the Dark Tower movie. Not because it's good, but because.
But it is good. Not because it's good.
No, it's not good. It's I do adore that it exists, though. Specifically, so here's my take, and I'm still fleshing this out. I'm figuring out how to put it in words for Chord Killers. But let's say that Universal Studios got the exclusive rights to a theme park ride based on the Game of Thrones franchise, right? It's a 10-minute long ride. What are the things that would happen? You would have
orgy.
You would have very few of the
incest.
Full list of characters, and you would not cover all the stories of it, but instead it'd be a peripheral side journey. And also every character, it would have a lower budget than you would expect. It wouldn't look as good, and each character would basically walk on screen, announce their name, and remind you of the motivation. So you'd be like, oh, it's me, Tyrion Lannister, and you must be the Forgotten Targaryen. Well, we've got to get you to Westeros fast. And then the thing would shake, and then a blast of cold air would come on, and then Jon Snow would be like, oh, I'm Lord Commander Jon Snow. Welcome to the wall. It's very cold up here, but you need to go meet the other Targaryen. And then 30 seconds later, you'd be over there. And if that existed, I don't think it would take anything away from Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones would still be a great epic tale. But I would be bummed if for the rest of my life I said, hey, have you experienced Game of Thrones? And people say, yeah, that 10-minute ride at Universal Studios? it was a bit cheesy. That'd be a bummer if that's all they knew. And that's kind of – but – as somebody who loves Game of Thrones, I probably would ride that ride. It'd be a fun ride to ride, even though everyone would be, even though it would have none of the subtlety or nuance or any of the things that made me love Game of Thrones itself. Does that make sense?
Sure, but do you think that this movie will be more like something that is just constantly tainting the larger art, or will it be like Avatar? The Last Airbender movie, where it's like it's just something that's kind of the Dragon Ball movie, where it's like it's a
Dungeons
thing,
and Dragons like, movie.
Yes, yes, it's
forgotten.
Correct. It's going to be it's going to be a don't count, just like a theme park ride doesn't count as the definitive experience of something, right? So in that regard, there were and just like I would on a theme park ride, there were a couple of moments I chuckled. And a couple of moments I was like, oh, that's a cool take on it. But by and large, I'm very aware that I'm on a machine that just shakes me back and forth and you know, has wedged in elements of what the original story had.
But if you were someone who had not read the books, is this a recommendation? Is this a good recommendation from you? Are you saying
do you like writing? Let's say you never read a Spider-Man comic. I ain't going to tell you not to ride the Spider-Man ride.
I'm not. No. But
that ride
is a good movie
awesome,
outside?
Brian.
Yeah.
Yes, but when it's over, do you feel like you've gotten the story of Spider-Man? No, not at all.
I felt like as rides go, this is a great effing ride, one of the best rides ever made.
Well, sure. I don't know how well it's aged.
But I go, man, this is, I have no idea the source material, but this movie, as movies go, is a really good movie.
Well, that's what I'm asking, is like, just as its own thing, is it a good standalone piece of narrative?
I don't know. I know it's not bad. It's not bad.
Okay, yeah.
It's not unpleasant, it's not like the act of being tortured, but that's hard for me to divorce myself from the experience. I didn't get on the ride because I wanted to ride a really good theme park ride. I got on it because it was the Dark Tower ride. You know
this
what I mean?
This is the movie. The metaphor is that the ride is the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I got on the ride for the property, and it was fun to remember some things.
Hey Brian, it's cool. Your adaptation too.
Fair enough.
I recall on one of our way back when we first heard the Dark Tower was going to be made into a movie, there was some skepticism here. I don't remember who. Don't know who was worried about it, but there was this a fear, a trepidation. About
I mean,
ability.
Yeah, I mean, that early in the I'll tell you what, man, seeing Ron Howard's name, second billing on those credits, you know, producer Ron Howard, kind of made me think a little bit about the upcoming Han Solo movie.
Remember, Ron was going to direct this Dark Tower.
Yeah, correct. He was going to do the massive sprawling, epic, literally epic.
So, you know, like how one of the warning signs of a movie can used to be like when you hear like, oh, you know, like, oh, I heard it sucks. Like, no, they're already talking about the sequel. Like, it hasn't come out yet. And people say it sucks. And the studio says, yeah, we're working on a sequel. That's what they say when it sucks. But they want you to go, oh, no, it's so good. They're going to make a sequel. The new one is the TV series. Remember Terminator Genisys? Like, oh, we're going to bring back Terminator. We got all these movies and we're going to do maybe a TV companion TV series. And then that movie came out. It's like, I would love to see a really good adaptation of The Dark Tower. And I think that I never fell in love with it. I read a couple of the books, but I understand it's a thing that probably done really well could be great. And it, but always seemed to me like, it's got to be an HBO series. It's got to a sprawling thing like this to try to put this into, you know, because it's so surreal.
Yeah.
You know, it's for a theatrical film. I'm like, how the, you know, trying to explain all of this stuff, you know, like, well, he's a gunslinger, but it's his fantasy world. And the scene where he puts the gun between the old lady's cooch and really what it has to deal with is like, oh, okay. This is
well,
HBO.
I'll tell you how they could have done it because I thought about this a little bit later. I would have loved it if there's a short story that's in that is a precursor to it takes place when the gunslinger is very first starting to seek out the trail of the Man in Black. So the Man in Black's never in it, and it's just him going town to town trying to track stuff down, and he comes to this dying, decayed town, and it's called the Little Sisters of Illyria. I don't know if you ever read it, but it's essentially it's a standalone wild fantasy west vampire tale. That could have been just a fantastic movie, just standalone, just by itself, and it would have given a hints of the weirdness and the strangeness and the out of time desynchronization in the background. And I think that would have been a much, much smarter way to introduce this world to the public. It didn't. It turs out it's a very, like I said, without subtlety or nuance, it's a theme park ride. That feels an awful lot like just a Doctor Who episode. It both in terms of budget and execution and everyone just shrugging and going along with it.
And length, right? Isn't it like 17 minutes long?
Yeah, well, and right down to the – I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but there's definitely a in fact, I won't. I'm going to save all that for spoiler in time. But anyway.
I have this – it was the main screenwriting credit went to Akiva Goldsman, who has been legendary screenwriter and who has been the go-to lately for a few, because every studio wants to create their big mega franchise like Star Wars or Marvel. And what's funny is the last big movie of the summer that his name was attached to as a writer was the Transformers, The Last Knight from the story by.
Oh, wow.
So he's been the go-to for that before. And so it's kind of, and he, you know, he was the writer of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. And so he's been involved in this for years doing this, you know, kind of thing. So, it's very kind of interesting that, you know, that was the plan, but these things have not sort of turned out that well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes. Oh, geez. That guy's IMDb. Holy.
He is a Hollywood legend. I have two picks for you.
Okay.
And they're both good picks. And they don't cost $300. Justin.
I know. I know who you're talking to.
Number one, if you have not seen it but have a chance to, Hacksaw Ridge. If you currently have an HBO subscription because you're watching Game of Thrones, Hacksaw Ridge was directed by Mel Gibson. And it's this true story of a conscientious objector in World War II who said, hey, I want to be a medic. I will never pick up a gun. And he went through a lot of problems like this, but he's a guy that ended up saving a lot of lives and became a hero. First conscientious objector to get like the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Wow.
And so he's a real guy, very, very touching story about this guy and his conviction to that and how his hero is, you know, we think of war movies, we think of being heroic is somebody willing to kill somebody. This is a person who is just willing there to put down, lay down his life to save somebody else. So, you know, I enjoyed it. The other pick is the Netflix series, which I really enjoyed, is Ozark.
Yes, 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 yes. Ozark is so good. I finished it last week and started, I guess 3 days ago I finished it, started watching it again with Bonnie.
Oh, wow.
Straight through. So, so good right from the beginning.
And I'm friends with one of the writers, Whit Anderson. She actually wrote some of the really awesome Daredevil season 2 episodes too. So, you know, that's that kind of that Netflix sort of cadre of writers they have going on there. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And it's like, because you hear the Breaking Bad comparison. Yes, it's, you know, it's suburban, really smart guy involved in crime. Very much. That's probably why that show got greenlit. Because like, you know, people really like Breaking Bad. What else can we do in that vein? But it has its own. It's very much its own show. So.
Yeah, very, very much. And very unlike much like it's a different take because that archetype, he reminds me more of Vic Mackey than of Walter White. In that he has a superpower, and his superpower is to talk his way not out of a situation completely, but at least the current thing lit on fire right now that he's dealing with. It's fantastic, man. Just hypnotic. I loved it.
Yeah, I just what a delight. It's one of those things I saw. I'm like, oh, you know, we'll see. You know, several of the episodes directed by Jason Bateman, and I've been a fan of Jason Bateman ever since. Anybody else remember the show?
It's your move. Oh my God! I knew that. Yes, that was totally my favorite.
No, that was a show that if it existed today, it was like a couple years before it become super meme worthy, like in the '90s. And if it existed today, it is really like classic Jason Bateman, where he's this sort of con artist kid living with his mom and always foiling against, you know, here's her mom's boyfriend and
neighbor.
You know,
yeah,
the Dregs of Humanity 2-part episode is still one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
So those are my picks, gentlemen. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.